Good morning, and welcome back to The Morning Magazine. It's time for part two.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine Part 2 for this November 20th, 2022, 11:33 on the clock, and you have your host, James, here, joined right now by Executive Director over at the Family Center, Sue Sipple. Good morning, Sue.
Hey, good morning.
How have you been?
Okay, busy.
Would you mind turning that just a little
bit? Sure.
I want to make sure they can hear that great voice
of yours,
Sue. It is so good to see you, and I always appreciate having the time with you and everything, and that we can put on this subject. First, before we dive into any of that, how have you been? How are you holding up?
Good. It's busy week at the Family Center. Full. We're full to the brim. Even have a family in a hotel at this point. So, gearing up for Christmas over there. We are, I think they're pretty well adopted out and taken care of, but we have individuals in the community adopt families in shelter for the holidays, mm-hmm. and they're very eagerly putting together their lists and shopping so that we can make sure that they have a good holiday when they're with us. So
very good to hear.
Yeah.
Before we dive too deep into the weeds on this one, I always like to journalistically let people know I am on the board of the Family Center. And even without that, I would like to think that, you know, one of those people that's on the right side of history mm-hmm. with this subject. Mm-hmm. But I always like to put that out there and make sure that people know and appreciate the time getting into this subject with you, Sue, especially because while we had some ideas of what to talk about today, we've had some recent news mm-hmm. that has kind of shifted our focus.
Yeah. Well, I think most people are aware of the recent homicide-suicide in Marshfield. Mm-hmm. Very tragic. A mom of two teenage children was killed by her, I believe they were married, ex-spouse or ex-partner, after she left. Which we know from our conversations is when most homicides, domestic violence homicides, occur, either as the person's leaving or after they left. News reports tell us that there was some stalking going on prior to the homicide, and that is another indicator of a relationship that could turn violent. Or lethal, not just violent, but lethal. I don't know other details, but, certainly because there were children involved, it is really difficult when somebody leaves to totally cut themselves off from mm-hmm. that abusive partner because, you know, the kids... generally, there's some arrangements for at least shared physical placement of children. And just leaving doesn't really stop things sometimes. So in thinking about today, I know that, you know, what I read on Facebook and here and et cetera, you know, people are... eager to try to help somebody that they know is in a mm-hmm. domestic violence situation. Mm-hmm. And so I thought maybe it would be a good idea to talk a little bit more about if you know somebody, what are some of the things you can do to help them? And we'll kind of focus on while they're still in the relationship, because it changes afterwards, obviously.
I think it's a really good subject matter. I would, before we go too far, you mentioned, as we're talking about this particular case, mm-hmm. Something that I think is not necessarily common knowledge when it comes to domestic violence, because so many people, their equivalent to this is whatever TV show or movie yes. they've seen mm-hmm. or Law & Order mm-hmm. SVU or whatever. And nothing against any of those. They all have a
right.
good place.
I watch them too.
Same here. And I think they do a lot of good. But I also think that while I would like to think that everybody understands, hey, I'm watching a TV show, hey, I'm watching a movie, the more shows that try to be realistic, the more they do that, the more the line gets a little blurred of, well, what's weird, what is an actual
really
thing
happens.
And
mm-hmm.
So many people, when they think of somebody leaving a domestic, a violent situation, think of them doing that, and then that's where the violence happens, and that because they try to leave, and so the person, you know, stops them or what have you. I do not think that it's common knowledge. The overwhelming number of homicides that happen are after a person leaves the home. It's after the quote-unquote hard part for some people that they look at in the movie and the TV show. Oh, they that was the moment. They picked
broke
up their...
free.
Yes, they broke free, and everything's going to be better now and that. Yeah. And that ain't the case. And it's important that we take a moment in life to stop and see, you know, hey, what really happens here? Not taking anything away from TV, movies, all that stuff. They bring awareness to a lot of subjects that, you know, you and I and many people work very hard to. They're able to reach a lot of people through these things. So I don't want to take away from the good they do there. But it is important for us to do a little more digging on these subjects at times and think, well, wait a minute, is that really how that happens? Where is the real... Because the heavy lifting, that's the first step. The heavy lifting oftentimes, and unfortunately a lot of the violence happens after that is done.
Right. And in many ways, it's because the abuser realizes that they are losing their control.
Yep.
Right? And so they need to ramp it up, right? And they get to a point that if I can't have you, nobody will. Yep. Or, you know, they are so, the victim is so much kind of the central figure in their life that they have to have, that, you know, as one maybe can surmise in this case, you know, they basically killed them and then killed themselves.
Yep.
You know, so it is tragic, and I certainly feel for those kids.
And as a society, we sit back, we see these things, we read these articles, these stories and stuff, and we... So many of us, like, are heartbroken, are pulls at our empathy, and after you get through a lot of these emotions and anger and a lot of this stuff, it comes down to, okay, how do we stop that from happening again? Or how can I change that from happening? How can I impact that? How can I help that family? There's so many follow-up questions to that, Sue, and that's kind of where we're going to put a little of our focus today.
And I brought a little article with me. There's a website called domesticshelters.org that puts out a weekly newsletter, and they have some really good articles. Don't agree with all of them, but most of them, about a whole variety of topics related to domestic violence. And so they have this article called 8 Ways to Help Victims of Domestic Violence, and brought it with me to maybe talk from. And
it's
so
a good outline.
Ironically, you know, us just talking about leaving, their number one item on their list is resist the urge to say leave. So, you know, it is tied to this. Leaving is a very dangerous time. And so it may not be the safest thing for them to do in that moment without some safety planning in anticipation of it and some real plans on how to leave. But also, we know in working with the hundreds of victims we've worked with over the years that it really has to be on that victim's timeline.
Yeah.
You know, if a family member gets frustrated or a friend is frustrated and enough is enough, I don't understand why they're going to leave and kind of don't leave and put out some sort of ultimatum, or, you know, a well-meaning friend or church member scoops them up and brings them to the family center. You know, I've often said they come in the front door and go out the back. If it's not on their timeline, they have to be ready to make this change in their life. So, you know, feed into their timeline.
Yeah, right? I think we're very well set. Very well set.
Okay, so the second thing on this list is believe them. You know, ironically, oftentimes victims aren't believed. And that comes from, we know that in a domestic violence relationship, the focus for the violence and the control is on their partner, and not they're not just generally mean people to other people. In fact, one of the maybe warning signs is somebody that's overly charming, right? And so out there in the world, people see this abuser as, geez, charming, really a nice person, great to be around, a lot of fun. And it's when they get home that they because of their belief and desire to have power and control over their partner, they become abusive. And so when the victim says something, it's discounted or, gosh, I don't know. I know Joe pretty well.
Right.
You know, I can't imagine he'd do that.
It's the first thing that comes up. He never treated me that way.
Yeah.
So why would he treat anybody else in the world that way?
And, you know, we even hear that post-homicides now. Again, not in this case in Marshfield because the brother spoke out. But we hear this sometimes in homicides where even family members say, I had no idea this was going on, right? And sometimes, you know, they feel guilty for not knowing and not seeing the signs. But it is because, you know, it's basically that behind closed doors, a well-kept secret. Person generally a nice person out in the community. So believe them is number two.
That, and we're going to go to break in a second here, Sue, but that is one I have to admit gets really under my skin.
Mm-hmm.
I was, you know, growing up the way I was and everything, my mom, it was very important, you know, understanding women's rights and so many of these things. And the first time I can remember her getting mad at another woman was about a lady in our neighborhood who was crying wolf, essentially, long story short. And the fact of how, you know, my mom, the first thing she said to me and my sister at the time, both of us were very young at the time, and like, this is, every false story makes it so much harder on everybody who is, it's not the person who's told their story already, the person who wants to tell their story and is afraid to, or something's holding them back. And I'm not going to make any friends here with this next statement, and I'm not going to say that it's very PC. I'm just saying this is myself. This is just James talking here. In today's day and age, in 2022 and going forward, I am more inclined to believe somebody and find out every bit of detail and fact afterwards and in the conversation than I am going into the conversation not believing them. I'm not saying you have to; it has to be one or the other. Hopefully, you can go into these conversations with an open heart, and open mind. But for me, in this day and age, I am much more inclined to believe the person, and I'll get the facts right then and there, and make you know my thoughts and decisions afterwards. And I don't mean to have this sound mean or you know I'm not trying to ostracize anybody or push anybody away or anything like that. But your opinion kind of doesn't matter. I don't mean that in a mean way or anything like that, because we're all told that, hey, our opinions count and our opinions matter and about this, this, and this about society. If somebody is speaking their truth, if somebody is explaining what they've just been through, the last thing that matters is your opinion about if they're telling the truth or not. You can just listen. You can just be there, and being an ally by just listening means so very much. This applies to anybody under this umbrella, but I especially think of kids, being a kid who was abused. And I wasn't abused by a partner, a dating partner or anything. I was abused by somebody who was babysitting me. And it was so difficult for me to talk about this and to tell people about it. And I'm very lucky I had the mom and dad I did. I can't imagine what it would have been like if I didn't have them. But as I grew older and talking and seeing other people who went through some trauma or something like that, even with them it was hard for me to say anything because I was afraid that they still wouldn't
judge.
How they judge me and if they believe me or not or anything. We're creating more and more an empathetic society that is getting better about this, but we can all do better work when it comes to this subject. And look, if somebody is crying wolf, the truth comes out. It will. But it is overwhelming. Anybody, you're a search engine away from looking this up yourselves. It is by far and away like 90-plus percentile of people who come across, and they're coming across because they're tired of hurting or they don't want there to be other victims. Very seldom, name the examples in human history of somebody coming out in this subject because they wanted a book deal, because they thought that they were going to make a bunch of money off of the person. The Deshaun Watson case is a great example of this. Those young ladies, what they've gone through and what they're doing right now with their braveness and their story, how many of them have you seen on the talk show circuit? How many of them have gotten a book deal? How many of them have, I mean, it doesn't happen. It's so easy for people to immediately go to that, like, oh, they're doing this for this reason. What's the examples you have of that in society, of people actually doing that?
Well, we're good at wanting to blame the victim and figure out they somehow brought this on or have ulterior motives. You know, statistics tell us there is false reporting of all crimes, but there is, it is the same percentage in domestic violence and sexual assault as robbery and, you know, other crimes. There isn't this huge surge of false reporting. And as you say, there's very, very little benefit.
Yeah. What's the, I mean, yeah, especially when it comes to these, not as, I'm not talking about just the high profile cases, just any case in general, a local case. There's especially, what is the advantage to that? You get to come out and tell people this intimate, that one of maybe the most intimate and, you know, tense thing that's ever happened to you. You share that with strangers? Like, come on. I mean, that's there's no incentive to that.
Most time you just want it to end or go away or wished it didn't happen. You know, even victims themselves try to figure out what they did wrong, you know, and to feed that, you know, is really doing them a disservice.
What happened to me happened when I was seven. I'm 45 and I'm still, you know, trying to figure out if there was something I could have done or whatever and everything. I'm much better now. I've healed a lot, but there's still little pieces of me that are like that. And again, my situation wasn't even a romantic situation or anything. So it only compounds it even more, the thinking we do, the questions we ask ourselves and everything. Just a quick minute break we're going to take right here, and we'll come back and get into some more of ways that people can help and identify some of these things. Speaking with Executive Director of the Family Center, Sue Sipple, here at WFHR, locally grown radio. Welcome back, everybody, to Morning Magazine here at WFHR, where we're speaking with Sue Sipple, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Rapids Family Center. We've been touching on the recent case that happened in the Marshfield area and kind of piggybacking off of that, if you will, to talk about ways that people can help others and what they can do in these situations. Sue, and let's just go right back into where we were.
Another way people can help is by understanding the resources that are available for victims. And we've talked about that many, many times on this show and are eternally grateful to the radio station and you, James, for, you know, getting the word about out about the resources that are available at the Family Center. So, you know, everybody, absolutely everybody should understand at least the basic resources that are available and how to contact us and make that referral.
And just for so in case there are some people out there listening that aren't familiar, Sue, how can they do that?
Okay. Our crisis line is 715-421-1511. We also have a website. It's FamilyCTR, that's charlietomrichard.org. We have a Facebook page if you want some ongoing information. You can certainly find us on Facebook. Just educate yourself.
Yes.
You don't have to know, you don't have to become the advocate. Just know that we exist and, you know, that there are services available.
Sometimes being an ally is just simply doing some reading and having some information. Now, like good insurance or something like that, hopefully you never have to use it. Hopefully you never have to relay this information to a friend or a relative or somebody. And certainly, hopefully, you yourself never have to. But it's awfully good to have it. It's awfully good to have in your back pocket if you need it or anything. So understanding the basics, as Sue was just touching on there, or wherever you live, wherever county you're in or anything like that, wherever you're listening to us, it can't hurt. There's no bad side effect. It's not like you learn that and you're going to forget algebra. You didn't know algebra that well anyway. Be honest with yourself. You didn't really know it.
The last piece is, you know, do what you can logistically to help. You know, whether it's if somebody comes into shelter, we can't take pets in the shelter. So, you know, can you offer to watch Fluffy while they're in the shelter? Do they need transportation somewhere? Can you offer to give them a ride? I think everybody, if everybody would just sit back for a few minutes and think about what they do in life and what they have to offer, you know, use that to benefit victims, whether you're a landlord, be a little flexible in taking one of the tenants that we refer that may not have the best rental history because of the domestic violence, right? If you are an employer, be understanding and flexible of, you know, court appearances that the victim might have, or, you know, safety for them. Is there somebody that can walk them to their car at night, at least in the beginning? You know, what can you in your role in life do to help with some of those nuts and bolts logistics? Maybe it's for someone who's thinking about leaving, agreeing to let them leave a luggage or you know, items at your house, because then after they leave, they have access to important documents or, you know, important things to them safely stashed at your house. So I think everybody can do something. You just have to figure out, you know, how much you're willing to do. If you want to do a lot, we're always looking for volunteers. You know, another way to help out.
So. I'm really glad you brought this up, Sue. You know, as I mentioned before, this is a topic that's been a cause of mine since I was a kid. I'm on the board at the Family Center. I've thought a lot about this. I've actually experienced this where a friend of mine, she did something, and she had two dogs, and I ended up watching those dogs for her for about a month, maybe, not even. So I've actually been in this situation, and I still hadn't really done that before. I think that's so insightful. That's very helpful. That's something that literally everybody can do. Just taking a beat back and kind of thinking about those fringe, those gray area things. There's so much that you guys do at the Family Center. It's nice to be able to like help out wherever we can and cover the bases, if you will.
Well, and, you know, when it comes to pets, that's one of the reasons victims stay is, you know, they realize they can't bring their pet with them to shelter. If it's a service animal, of course, it's a different story. But they can't bring their pet. And, you know, they're concerned that the abuser is going to harm the pet. That goes hand in hand with domestic violence. They don't want to put the animal in the Humane Society, you know, and so, you know, they stay. So
oftentimes we ask people to put themselves in somebody else's shoes for empathetic reasons. And I think that that's a positive and one of the best things we have as human beings, empathy in that. It's one of our superpowers. The other side of this, too, though, and I don't know if I'm recommending this necessarily as much as I am just trying to kind of make note of it. I do this as an actor all the time. Sometimes I have to play bad guys, and I got to put myself in that mindset and know, okay, what are they thinking? How can I literally be in their shoes? And it's uncomfortable, and I don't like it, but it's the job. I'm asking a little of that. I think that you can relate to and be empathetic to victims of this so much more if you think about where these cowards are coming from, the control aspect of these things and stuff, and so much of that. I'm not saying necessarily I want people to put themselves in these abusers' shoes, but if you understand it, and not in an empathetic way by any means, but more so in, well, what is matters to them, then you can understand maybe a little bit more of how you can help the person who is the victim in this situation. As you were just touching on there as a perfect example. Well, that family doesn't have any kids. They just got a couple pets. So that can't be something that's a control. But animals, if not just as much, can be even more sometimes a dependent than a child can be. Because if a child is a teenager and up and taking care of themselves and all that, that's one thing. The dog can't let itself out. The dog can't feed itself. The dog can't let, or a cat or any of these animals. So they can sometimes be even more of a, oh, I know I've got them because I have the animals. So as a friend to that person who could be a potential victim or is a victim, if you offer to take those animals, you have no idea what you might be able to, you know, how much help you might be being in that situation.
Absolutely.
I don't think I would have thought of that if I hadn't put myself in that the other person's shoes for a second. And I'm not in an empathetic way to make them a sympathetic character by any means, but more so to understand the whole situation. That's what's going on.
Well, I think those of us that are fortunate enough never to been in an abusive relationship, you know, what we know as a relationship, a healthy relationship, we take the rules of that and apply it to this relationship. And so things don't make sense. Why don't they just talk things through?
Right. Yeah.
You know, So I think a good point that you make, James, is, you know, to really see the whole picture and understand the dynamics of that relationship from both sides, the victim side and the abuser side, to really to be empathetic and understand what's going on.
Yeah, it's helpful. It's what you want to help this person who's been through this. You want to help them. This is one of the ways I think that you can go about that. Mm-hmm. So we never have enough time.
We never do.
And we want people to be able to learn more about this subject and just dive into it more. Also want to remind people that the Family Center is hiring. They're looking for shelter coordinator, children and youth services coordinator, Hmong advocate, part-time shelter advocate, part-time visitation assistant. All of these very rewarding and very good positions. If people want to find out more about the things we've talked about or these positions that are available, Sue, what can we recommend? What is the best way to do that?
They can certainly call. And the business line is 715-421-1559. The positions, open positions, are posted on the website. The job description or a summary of the job description, as well as the application and, you know, how to go about applying, are all on that website. www.familyctr.org.
Yeah, and as always, volunteers or simple needs around the Family Center, if you can drop those off, we greatly appreciate those donations, those investments. Mm-hmm. Those are investments in your community. The Family Center doing some of the hardest, most vital work in our community. You help them do that by dropping off paper towels or simple-to-eat items, things like that.
Diapers. Right now we have a couple of little explosive children.
Yeah.
Three and four.
Keep the diapers coming, everybody. You know what it's like.
A large family, and so they're going through diapers like crazy, and they're not cheap.
Cannot thank you enough, Sue. Please say hi to the staff for us. You guys be safe and take good care, and have a great Thanksgiving.
You too. Thanks.
We'll have more for you tomorrow right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.